Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. Enjoy that. We've got news. Hallelujah. 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 I thought I'd get somebody else to sing it rather than me. Hello. Welcome to, it was going to be our second to last episode, or rather possibly our last episode. It's not. It's actually going to be our second to last episode because we're going to do the Absolute Rally quiz next week, which I've just been talking to the boys about, which I'm quite excited about, by the way. If you've got questions for the boys, right, DM them to me personally at TonySimpson74 if you'd like your questions to be part of our quiz. Our boys are going to be joined by Zav McCartan as well, so it's going to be the three of them, and I'm going to be posing the questions. So have a bit of a think. If you've got any tricky questions, you know what these two are like. Of course, Jack Bennion on my left there. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tony.
And on my right, we have Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello.
So you know that these two boys normally know the stuff, and Zav makes stuff up if he doesn't. So I'm looking for questions just to see whether we can catch them out, and it will be points. Bit of points for punditry, more than anything. Points for punditry. There you go. So we've got news. I hope you enjoyed Hallelujah. Did you enjoy the Hallelujah, Jack?
No, I thought it was the worst start to anything I've ever heard in my entire life.
Wow. Ryan Champion, you've been hearing music before this, but did you enjoy the Hallelujah?
It was slightly unexpected.
Well, that's what it was all about. That's what it was all about. That's why I thought I'd do it. And, you know,
I thought it was a famous Absolute Rally technical issue.
I tell you what, you haven't had your rusks, you've had all these rusks and enough sleep, have you? Hey, youngster. Hey, you started this podcast before we pressed record. You were saying, oh, it's been tiring. I've been in the office all day and all night, and I'm not getting a day off this week. Welcome to the big boys world, young man. Welcome to the big boys world. Ryan Champion.
I'm only 12. I'm not ready for this.
I know. We were going to get you a razor for Christmas. We realised it would be obsolete for the next 10 years.
It's a bit too soon.
It is a bit too soon. Ryan Champion, are you all right?
I'm very well, thank you, yes.
You're quite friendly. At least your digs are normally happen after three bottles of red wine. Jack's straight in there. Boys, we're mucking about and we shouldn't be. There's been big news. I'm going to start with Jack because the reason why he's probably tired is because of this news and, of course, his work at Motorsport News. Jack, it's confirmed. It wasn't going to go anywhere else, was he?
Oh, I don't know. I think it was close. Okay. But, yeah, it's obviously a great result for the World Rally Championship, I think, above all else. We're going to get a great selection of drivers in different cars. Should be a great battle for next year, and I think, you know, it was the best place for Ogier to go, and, you know, we've got a really exciting season ahead now, haven't we?
I think so. I think, you know, again, there's, right, dare I say, is there a level playing field here? We've got new cars, new drivers in those new cars, as well as obviously some of the boys have been testing some of them. Obviously, Juhannan in the situation of the Toyota, of course, and obviously like Tanak in the M Sport car, and obviously all the Hyundai drivers have been driving the 2017 car. Are we starting with a clean sheet of paper? Is everybody on ground zero almost next year?
Well, we're certainly starting with a clean sheet of paper. Whether everybody's starting on an even keel, that one's debatable. I mean, really, you would say that at the moment the odds are stacked against Sebastian Ogier. He's the one who isn't familiar with the car. We know that Chris Meek has been testing the Citroen for a long time now. That, like you said, the Hyundai boys are very familiar with their car. The Toyota, we maybe don't expect to see fighting right at the front in Monte Carlo anyway, but Ogier's starting on the back foot, but it's Sebastian Ogier, it's a four-time world champion, so that probably equals things up. But it's firstly fantastic for everybody, for M Sport, like Jack said, for the WRC, that that Ogier not only has a deal, but that he's with M Sport. It gives M Sport a fantastic opportunity to win the championship. But also, I think it's good for rallying all round. It's good for British rallying. Don't forget, we used to win world championships regularly. It wasn't just Colin McRae that was winning world championships. It wasn't just Richard Burns. It was the Pro Drive team out of Banbury. It was the Mitsubishi Rally Art team out of Rugby that were winning year on year. And we haven't seen world championships for a long time. So I think it's, you know, it's great news for us in this country that we've got a team now that stand a fantastic chance of winning the world championship.
I call me kind of not what's the best way to put it? I'm a little bit of a romantic, Jack. Number one on the door of a Ford kind of takes me back to the heyday.
Yeah, it's a nice story, isn't it? We've not had this kind of excitement around M Sport since probably 2001, so it's really good to, like Ryan said, to have that British team hopefully fine at the front again, and hopefully it'll reinvigorate British rallying a little bit, because you know we've been lacking that kind of that pyramid, haven't we? The guy at the top who well, not the guy, obviously it's going to be the team this time, but you know, someone to get behind really. We've got Chris Meek, but as Ryan said there, we used to have so many different teams and so many different drivers competing up at the front, and we've just not really had that for the past few years, so it's going to be really nice to have that, you know, selection of people to support at the front.
Can I just put this out there, and I don't subscribe to this, but you know, Sebastien Ogier has had his detractors with regards to his demeanour at times. Obviously he's had issues with running order and things like that, which we've talked about and we've debated throughout the programme, you know, throughout this year. Sometimes people found it easier to perhaps dislike him, and yet people who encounter him say how much of a lovely bloke he is and everything else. Do you think people might be warming to him now he's not in the mighty German manufacturing mark and he's in that private M Sport car? Do you think there might be a bit more love shown to Sebastien Ogier? I'll come to you first, Jack.
Yeah, I think there will be. I think, you know, part of the reason why there was so much sort of stigma towards Sebastien, if you like, last year was the fact that, you know, he's winning everything, and well, it wasn't just last year, was it? It's been for the past few years, but you kind of get that with your likes of Michael Schumacher and who's at Ferrari and that kind of thing. So, you know, maybe if the playing field's a little bit more even, like we've talked about a little bit there, maybe Sebastien, you know, he's going to be a bit more popular with the fans. But you know, I think I've been lucky enough to have met Sebastien before and see him sort of in a sort of more sort of secluded environment. He is I would say a very nice person and very modest actually in a lot of the ways he talks about rallying. So you know, what a lot of the fans hear is him at stage ends after, you know, ploughing through a 12-mile stage, cleaning the road and being quite angry that he's had to do that. So I don't think you can really judge Sebastien on the heat of the moment type situations that we usually hear him in. And I think he'll become a lot more popular with the fans next year.
What do you think, Ryan? Do you think he might suddenly get an uplift in his supporters and things like that? Now he's got I nearly said the Blue Oval then. It's not officially the Blue Oval, but, you know, there's been plenty of rumours about that as well, hasn't there?
Well, it's still got a Blue Oval badge on it, hasn't it? And yeah, like we said, Henry Ford III was at M Sport last week. M Sport were keen to say that there's going to be no official Ford backing for the project in the short term. But let's hope something does come of that. But yeah, of course, it's going to boost Ogier's popularity for two reasons. Firstly, as we said, from a selfish British point of view, it gives us some real British interest with a car fully developed here. But secondly, it's putting the world's best driver in a new team, and you know, it's testing him, isn't it? And that's what we like to see. It's sometimes, I won't say easy, but if you put the best driver in the best car, then they have the best opportunity to win the championship. And now he's jumping into a brand new car that he's only done maybe 50 kilometres in, and he's going to go and try and win a world championship, and that's great for the sport. You know, it puts exciting battles in prospect. We expect the Hyundai to be very good. They did a great job with the 2016 car. I'm sure the 2017 car will be strong. We fully expect the Citroën and Chris Meek to be a fantastic package. You know, I think the speed will be undoubted from Chris and the car. So let's hope that Chris can consistently take the fight to Ogier. And let's not forget, Tanak was signed in or confirmed. His signing was confirmed in this announcement as well. And we've seen Tanak's speed, so that'll be great to see alongside Ogier in the M Sport team.
Which brings me to my next point. Again, we'll come to Jack first. Eric Kamali. Discuss.
What about him?
Well,
I think we could very likely see him in an R5 next year. I think, judging by what's gone on, that's not confirmed, and I've got no sort of inside information on that for you, but I think it'd be very likely that we'll see Eric either step down to an R5 or compete in a 2016 WRC car next year. But I think the R5 is the most likely option.
Because we'll come to this. There's been plenty of, you know, Elvin plays his cards very close to his chest. He was out at the weekend doing the rally sprint with Harry Rovanperä, his boy, and Thierry Neuville. Kyle apparently blew everybody away. Elvin did win that event. It's the Bessinger rally sprint, isn't it? He did win that event, obviously a DMAC car, DMAC overalls and everything else. And there's a little bit of a feature in MN, I think on page 11 this week, talking about, you know, Evan's set for DMAC WRC drive.
Yeah, it's been a sort of a long one, this one, hasn't it? It's been much longer than the OJ's kind of saga. It's been ongoing for a while where Elvin will end up next year. And, you know, I've been a big supporter of hoping that Elvin would get back in a WRC seat, because I really think he deserves to be there. Given, the 2015 season, he was pretty much on par with Tanak and crashed a lot less. I think he on par with Tanak in that season. So to lose his seat was unfortunate, and I think he deserves to be back there. And it looks like, according to David Evans, we think he might be the third M Sport entry next year with DMAC back in. So it'd be great to see him in the WRC, and a few rumours about where Andreas Mikkelsen might end up as well. And I'd absolutely love to see Elvin Evans and Andreas Mikkelsen in DMAC Fiestas, because seeing that those two go up against each other would really give you A, an idea of how good Elvin is, and B, an idea of how good the DMAC tyres are with Mikkelsen on board as well.
I think that, again, we're back into dream kind of WRC land, aren't we? I think coming up with something like that.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, you just think about the running of a 2017 car. I just wonder where the finance would come from to run a two-car team, although. How would that?
There's questions about where the money comes from all the time, isn't there? But, you know, they keep coming back every year with new and improved projects, don't they? So, you know, it's I agree with what you're saying. It's interesting to see where they'll fund everything. But I think it could happen potentially.
Yeah, right. How would that work with regards to? We spoke quite at length last week. And, you know, there was obviously Jack had a note. He didn't turn up. He was roundy last week. He didn't care about rallying last week. So we had Julian Porter. But we were talking about homologation and things like that. Now, with this new car, is it the fact that M Sport are there? It doesn't really matter with regard to the DMAC situation, because they're almost like a customer team running under the DMAC livery, if that makes sense. Am I making myself clear here?
Yeah, well, the rules were originally written, weren't they, that a team homologated the car and chose the tyres that car was on. So that was always one of the discussion points. I think there had to be a slight change in the way the regulations were written to allow a satellite DMAC team, if you like. So I guess that must be in place now. It isn't something I've followed up. But, initially, a team had to choose their tyres, whereas obviously we're going to see two separate teams within the M Sport camp on different tyre suppliers.
Now, before we come further on with that story, I just wanted to just dip our toe back into the pool of Toyota. Yari Matti, it wasn't confirmed, but then there was video footage of him out testing, and obviously you guys have done a big page on it today, Jack. The launch is tomorrow. The lovely Bex Williams, I think, is hosting it. He's going to be joining us later in this podcast. And we're not surprised that Yari's gone there. Everybody's showed concern with regard to some of the video footage and things like that. Has there been any feedback? Has anything been picked up from Yari, or from, you know, behind the scenes from Yari driving the car? Because, you know, obviously there was some concerns on some of the footage. You know, Sebastian Ogier expressed a couple of concerns, but he did put the caveat in it was a very slippy road. Are we getting any feedback from Yari?
Not yet, no, unfortunately. It'd be interesting to see what he's got to say about the car, but, you know, I think you can see in the video that the test that Sebastian did was that the car wasn't quite there. But, you know, we've we are getting close to Monte Carlo now, but you know, I don't think you can judge how good a car is going to be by watching a couple of minutes of it on a test, to be honest. I mean, I know you can see how the car's responding to how it's being driven and things like that, but there's plenty of stuff teams can do with the car, and you know, you've got to remember these guys are working with active discs for the first time in a few years and things like that. So there's nothing to say that, you know, the car won't come on quite a bit before Monte, and you know, I think you'd be absolutely stupid to rule out, you know, Toyota competing at the front of the field based on a couple of minutes of video.
Do you know what, you've just picked up on something there, which I don't think we've got many better people that we could ask about this. Right, just for the uninitiated, obviously, you know, we cater for everybody, and I include myself in that, in this particular next bit. Explain the situation between an active diff and, I suppose, a passive diff is what we experience at the moment. What different characteristics does it create?
Well, basically, you can alter the parameters in the differential. You can change how the differential's working. So if you have a passive diff, it does what it does. You can change the setup of it, but under braking, it works one way. Under acceleration, it works another way. With an active diff, it's effectively computer controlled. It has its own management system. So you can alter it depending on throttle angle, brake position, steering angle, etc. So it's effectively a continuously variable diff. And in theory, you can also change the parameters of that. So you can have it working one set way, you can click to another setting, and it will alter those parameters within the diff. So basically, infinite adjustment is the best way to describe it.
That's why I just like having Ryan Champion there, Jack. just so we can pull someone out the bag like that. You mentioned Andreas Mikkelsen, Jack. Yeah. I think everybody now, I think there's a genuine concern now for what's going to happen with Andreas. Obviously, you've just mentioned, you know, possibilities, maybe a two-car DMAT team. I'd raise an eyebrow at that, but equally, I'd raise an eyebrow at the fact that Andreas doesn't have a seat.
Yeah, well, you know, the D-back's just a rumour. You know, he could end up driving an M-Sport car with Michelins on it for all we know. You know, it's like we've said, we're still in dreamland when it comes to Andreas. But, you know, I don't think we're going to see him at Toyota now. We've got this confirmation because we've got Latvala and Hannonen confirmed and Ezepekka Lappi as a test driver. So, also very interested to know what's happened to Timo Sunnenen there, because there was no mention of him during the whole situation. So I don't know if he's going to be a second test driver or whether he's got a different plan for next year now. But, you know, he's tested the Toyota and Lappi hasn't. So I found that announcement quite strange. But yeah, going back to Andreas, you know, in the piece we've got in MN this week, you know, David Evans claims that there's sources that say Hannover want 14 million to run two VWs next year, which is just, you know, my eyes watered at reading that. I couldn't actually believe what I was reading. 14 million to run two WRC cars next year. So I doubt that's going to happen in terms of having private polos in the field and Mikkelsen driving one of those. So, you know, his only option now really looks like it's going to be M-Sport, isn't it? Unless something shuffles around quite heftily before the start of the season.
Yeah, right. You and I were probably around when Andreas first came to the fore, I guess. You know, I remember him being run out of Ramsport, and I'd say friend of the show, Jamie Edwards, kind of worked behind the scenes and looked after him. They almost babysat him. He was driving Focus, you know, World Cars at 15 and things like that. We all know that the family put quite a lot of money into his career, but you know, over the last 2 or 3 years, 4 years, with the Skoda driving in IRC, and then obviously stepping up to the Polo and things like that, you know, it has been money well invested. But you do tend to think that, you know, they're not going to be in a position now where they can keep, you know, and probably they don't want to go back to the days of having to bankroll a career when he was very much at the forefront and a manufacturer.
No, you know, we haven't talked about Mads Osberg yet, but you know, the Osbergs have the adapter team. It's already there. The infrastructure exists. They probably have the financial clout to do something themselves as well. But like you say, Andreas really established himself as a front running professional WRC driver. Like you said, the family did put a lot of support behind him in the early days. You know, I remember being up at John Hoglan's when I think Andreas was 16 and he was running around the lakes in a Focus World Rally car at the time. But then his dad actually pulled the backing out sort of halfway through Andreas's career, and he really had to relaunch his own career, which he did. And like we said, he's gone on to be a real professional driver. And it's it would certainly be a shame to see him without anything. I'm sure he will not be without his backers. Having said that, you know, we know he's probably got his Red Bull personal sponsorship. He's well known in his own country of Norway now. Norway very much support their motorsport, so it's not beyond belief that he could bring some back in to put something together. But obviously, time's running out.
Absolutely. Jack, we it feels odd to say, right, we're going to kind of move away a little bit. Now we're going to come on to, as I say, we spoke about Elvin Evans winning the Bettinger Memorial Rally Sprints.
Bettinger, let's Bettinger, get this right.
Bettinger.
It's named after a dealer, Bettinger, who died on Corsica.
Okay, no, I know that, but it's just the way I pronounce it. Boys, don't start ganging up now.
No, we're not ganging up. I just thought you needed a bit of help there, so just try to help out. I'm sure you'd do the same for me.
Fucking hell, he's very cranky today. Very cranky today.
No.
Our new sponsor for next year should be Farley's Rusks. Just for Jack. Kyle Rovanperä.
Callie. Yeah, definitely Callie.
Yeah, sorry, thanks, boys. See, you've thrown me now completely. Callie Rovanperä. Yeah, thanks. I feel like I've been talking about him for a while, even though he's 16 years old. Another outstanding drive at the weekend. Obviously, Elvin's come out and said some quite nice things about him. Not things that we haven't already kind of probably gleaned ourselves. 16 years old. Jack, you've wrote the piece is on page 11, I think, this week for you guys. What are we picking up from this? Where does he go next? Because he's still 16 years old.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, the first thing I'd probably point out there is that, you know, Elvin's a really nice guy, but, you know, he's not a person who comes out and talks about other drivers very often. So I think that's quite significant that he's felt the need to say things about Callie. Callie was very impressive in his first time in a Fiesta WRC car. He's not driven one before, rocked up on the event and actually beat Elvin on one of the little runs. So very impressive pace. We've seen him, almost beat Pontus Tiedemann earlier this year in I think it was in Latvia, wasn't it? And he had a puncture there. So, you know, he's really proven his pace to the world of rallying against some proper people who have got real pedigree. So, you know, I think, you know, David Evans has written a column this week saying that rallying has found its Max Verstappen. And that's a big, bold claim to make. But, you know, I think the point of his column is right. I think, you know, we're likely to see Callie in the WRC, if not next year, the year after, and for many years to come after that as well, judging by his pace that he's shown so far.
Right. I suppose you were a bright young thing once. and we've seen plenty of bright young things and, you know, start off strong and then perhaps plateau out. If you were advising, what would you be doing? I know obviously his old man's got a hell of a lot of experience. His old man was obviously managed by Timo Jokke as well. But if you were involved, what would you be doing with him?
Well, it's just a case of gaining the experience, isn't it? Gaining experience and building that experience up, because the one thing he hasn't really been doing yet is competing on obviously world championship events. But what I mean by that is I don't necessarily mean the level, but I mean the length of events. So it'll be building up that confidence and building up the consistency that he can perform at an obvious high level that he's at for 3 days. I think when he, you know, I don't think there's any doubt he'll get to WRC, and when he gets to WRC, he will, as a young driver, go over the limit. You know, that's the only way to find the limit is to go beyond it, and we will see probably some accidents from him. But it's a case of learning from them very quickly, finding the consistency quickly, and if we can see him competing at the front of rallies regularly, then I'm sure he will have a very rapid rise through the sport. And like we said, he's been around for a few years already. He's already done a lot of miles. He's done a lot of miles in an R5 car this year. He started in a WRC car now. I think what would probably be good for him when he comes to the WRC is to do a year in an R5 car, for example, not jump straight into a WRC car. But let's see. Whoever's, like you say, his father's a very knowledgeable guy. He's been there and done it himself. He's got backing team behind him, a management team that they're very knowledgeable as well. They might think he's ready for a WRC straight away. I personally think it'd be good if he came in at R5 level, do a year in that, and then move up to WRC. But let's see what happens.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate, call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Jack, I want to come to it's a story that's kind of been brewing. I think, you know, there's been people commenting about ERC of late, and there's been a couple of things. Now, you guys have run a headline here: ERC defends dropped rounds and lack of classic events.
Yeah, there's been a few talks, hasn't there, about the ERC calendar for next year, dropping a few events, which I actually think is a good idea. And you know, a few people criticising the lack of classic events. I think, you know, one of the classic events was the Circuit of Ireland, which has been lost out of their control. And Ypres have decided to go a different way than the ERC. So I don't really see how this is the ERC's fault. I think they're reacting to a difficult climate and rallying at the moment. And, you know, I think they've done a relatively good job. We've talked so much on a previous podcast about the costs involved in the ERC and what it can do to improve, and, you know, dropping a couple of rounds is going to make costs a lot more effective. You know, whether it's the right thing to do, but, you know, only hindsight will tell. But I think some of the criticism's been, you know, a touch harsh in the ERC's direction. I think they're reacting to a very difficult climate at the moment.
Okay, happy days. Right, let's move on.
Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think going down to 8 rounds, I think I still think it's going to be a big ask when you look at the geography spread of some of these events. And, you know, we spoke about some of the island events that they've included and things like that, which are very, very expensive. And then I suppose we look at, you can't have it both ways, can you? Because we've all spoke about WRC2 and how that's run this year, where people not competing against one another and just going to score points and, you know, things like that. And so, you know, maybe some of these championships that it is a 6 from 8 scoring, where it makes people go to them, it might carry a little bit more weight. I don't know. But anyway, we will push on. We spoke about DMAC before. I just want to come to this because I think it does have a knock-on effect. Guest we had on the other week, Rob Duggan. I'm going to talk about him in a second. But DMAC won't be running an R5 team in the 2017 BRC, Jack.
That's right. Dick Cormack feels like they achieved everything they needed to last year. You know, they turned up in the BRC and dominated with a top driver, didn't they? And, you know, they feel like they've achieved everything they can in the championship, so they won't be running any works cars next year. Their plan is to try and back a front runner. You know, we know they've backed Matt Edwards not throughout his career, but for many, many years now. And, you know, he's stepping up to an R5 next year, so maybe Matt's an option, and maybe they'll look to bring someone else on board. There's always people looking for tyre deals, isn't there? So their next step now is to back a front runner R5 car and try and get the same amount of coverage that I've done this year by doing that.
Okay, now one thing that has come out, and I think you know, Rob Duggan, who won the junior title, of course, which contributed towards, you know, funding towards the DMAC Drive Trophy, of course, which has been running the World Rally Championship over the last few years. Very fortunate. The way they changed the format, of course, we had John Armstrong and we had Ossian Price both winning a couple of drives there, as did Max Ratanen as well. But that format really breathed, you know, energy into it. But of course, with the announcement that M Sport have won the JWRC contract now, there's some rumours, isn't there, Jack, that it's all going to be put together, and that could leave Rob Duggan in a kind of a sticky wicket.
I think Rob will be okay. It's awkward that MN falls on a, you know, our press day is on a Monday for people who don't understand how MN works. So we finish it on Monday night and it comes out on a Wednesday. I'm expecting a JWRC announcement this week. And the understanding is that DMAC will basically run the Drive DMAC Trophy as the JWRC. Regulations to be confirmed and things like that. It might not be exactly the same as the Drive DMAC Trophy has been this year. But yeah, that's my understanding. So as far as the idea of that story with Rob was concerned, was to just to show that if that does happen and the Drive D Match Trophy does move to the JWRC, Rob's subsidy from that he won last year towards the JWRC now, if you like, is safe. DMAC will honour that, and as long as Rob raises the rest of the budget, you know, he's safe to do exactly the same as what he would have done, except he's probably, you would argue, getting a better prize now because he's going to win, he's going to be in a championship that is backed by the FIA. So I think it's positive for Rob in the end.
Yeah, well, I hope so. Fingers crossed for him. Did you see any of the in-car in a Mark II Escort when he did the Killarney Historic the other week?
I've seen quite a bit of Rob's in-car from Escorts. He's driven 1.6 Escorts all throughout the year for a friend, and he stepped up to the 2.5 litre in Killarney, and yeah, you know, you only need to watch a bit of Rob's on board to realise how special he is, I think.
Folks, search it out, seriously. It's some serious pedalling. Now, I just want to, we've been talking a lot about young drivers. Now, Skoda, I find it interesting what's going on with Skoda Motorsport at the moment, and let me explain. Okay. We spoke about Tino Sunderland before, and obviously Lappi left Skoda Motorsport after securing the WRC2 title, and they've kind of used the APRC as a bit of a feeder series, and they've sent drivers there. I know they sent Pontus Tiedemann there. I think they sent Lappi there as well, and they had another driver out there, Fabian Kramer, who was finished runner up to Gill this year. Now he's come out. He's quite happy that, you know, it's still part of the learning curve. But now does again, this is probably just an opinion. Do you think, guys, that there was almost a blind ladder that was put there? And what I mean is by that is perhaps if you did well in the Skoda, you might have ended up potentially in the Volkswagen team. I know that didn't really happen. Andreas was kind of the exception to the rule, of course. But do you think maybe now the Skoda drive isn't perhaps deemed to be what it was? I'll come to you first, Jack.
I think that's... moving on, that's going to be decided by what sort of happens with the VW program, isn't it? Because with the situation we've got now is obviously Skoda owned by Volkswagen building an R5 car as a customer program. So it doesn't really work when you've got two manufacturers owned by the same company, doing customer programs. So it's going to be interesting to see how that moves forward. But I don't think the Skoda program was ever put in place to directly feed the Volkswagen team, was it? I think it was, they've always been about bringing on young drivers, which is admirable. But it's my understanding that the Asia Pacific stuff's run by MRF, isn't it? As you all know, Tony. So that's their program, and it's not really, you know, I know it's run by Skoda Motorsport and they have the input into it, but it's not really sort of the same kind of thing. I don't know, maybe. I don't know what Rye thinks.
Go on, Rye.
Well, I think like you said, Jack. I mean, there was no formal ladder in place that if you did well with the Skoda R5 program, you would move to the Volkswagen WRC program. But at the same time, we probably all put that in place with them all being in the under the same umbrella, as if you like. I think it's. Hopefully Skoda will still serve that same function, because what they've done over recent years is they've been a fantastic developing ground for up and coming young drivers. And the one thing that Skoda have consistently done that really nobody else has is run a factory R5 team. Yes, we've seen Elvin at times in an M Sport, a factory M Sport R5 car, but we haven't really seen a factory R5 team from Peugeot, from Citroën. Hyundai obviously relatively new with their program, but what I'm saying is, Skoda have consistently run that factory team with the second division car, with the Super 2000 car and then the R5 car in it. And it has meant that they could take young drivers and really develop them into championship winners. So, let's hope that continues.
Do we see perhaps, just going back to what Jack's just said there, and of course, Skoda Motorsport have always kind of, obviously they did run the world cars a few years back now, but they kind of found their level, as you've just said, with the Super 2 car. Car and lastly with the R5 car. Do we see perhaps, maybe Skoda staying in WRC and maybe Volkswagen Motorsport maybe go in ERC or vice versa? Do you think that's how the two brands could possibly live side by side in R5 cars?
I think it depends on how they treat it, because like I just said, if Volkswagen purely see the R5 car as a customer car, and then they just let importers run the car, as has happened with the Peugeots and the Citroëns, etc., then I don't think Volkswagen as a group will have any problem with Skoda carrying on their program. like I said, it all depends on how they want to run the car. If Volkswagen want to run a factory R5 team, then they'd have to look at it. If they purely want to sell R5s to customers, then I don't think there's any issue with the Skoda program continuing. And you just mentioned sort of finding their position. I think it probably comes back to the funding at the end of the day. I don't think when Skoda were a fully fledged WRC team, they probably didn't have the funding, it's fair to say, of the top performing teams. They actually used a lot of ProDrive components on their World Rally cars back in the day, whereas with an R5 car, it's to a degree built to a spec, it's built to a budget, and they can build a front running car.
Yeah, you just reminded me. Did we ever talk about that Proton World Rally car? Did we ever get round to talking about that?
I can't remember what we did.
Remember, there was a whole thing on Twitter. I did know quite a bit. I probably not quite as much as you, but basically, for those who do listen on a regular basis, thank you. We do appreciate the download. But back in the day, ProDrive were supplying a lot of components, as Rise just said, to Skoda, and they also built pretty much a Proton World Rally car. Proton came to them and said, "Yep, we want a World Rally car." They built it and flew it over, and basically. And there was some cross wires, and Proton kind of thought they were getting more than just the car, and ProDrive thought they were just getting the car, and then the car was parked up and never ever used, and it's now gathering dust in the Proton Museum. There you go. I thought I'd just follow up on that some from about 6 weeks ago that we possibly didn't talk about. Boys, we're well past our sell-by date, as some people may say, but we're definitely getting well over time. Have we got any other businesses ready? Okay. Now, do we do the quiz? We've got the quiz, of course, and we need to give, we need to kind of do that. Should we do the draw before we do our any other businesses, or should we wait? Should we add a bit of tension? Okay.
There's tension.
There's the tension. Thank you very much. Right. We need to doff our cap at a couple of people who've had a go. Gary Boyd came in as a late entrant. Even though he kind of graciously said, because I'm late, I won't take the prizes for one. He hadn't won anyway. So, Gary, you, unfortunately, you wouldn't have won the t-shirt anyway. Phil Kellum, as well. Unfortunately, you missed out. As Ryan set the question, I am going to let Ryan tell you the answers. So Ryan Champion, please divulge the debuts of these cars.
All right. Well, we'll do them in the order they appeared on the World Rally Championship. So the first one to actually be introduced was the Ford Escort Cosworth, which made its World Championship debut in Monte Carlo in 1993. That was followed by the Subaru Impreza 555, quite a famous debut really for the Subaru in Finland of 93. Marco Len rolled very early on and destroyed the car, but Vatanen took a strong second place. The Toyota's an interesting one. The 205 Celica, the big wing Celica, was introduced the following year in 94. It actually made its debut in Australia, as somebody quite rightly pointed out on Twitter, but that wasn't a WRC event that year. It was a Formula 2 only event. So its full World Championship debut came in San Remo in 94. And then finally, the Mitsubishi Lancer, the Evo 3, we're talking about the class of 95. It wasn't introduced till well into 1995. The Evo 3 Lancer came in Corsica, taking third place with Andrea Reghini. And then, of course, that car stayed around for 18 months or so, taking the World Championship title in 96 with Tommy Mäkinen.
Jack, did you get these right?
I got all of them right.
Eventually.
Yeah. Yeah, it did take me a while, but I got them all right, didn't I?
You did.
I was nowhere near. Anyway, boys, we've got basically what we've done. And if anybody wants photographic evidence of this, we've got the winning answers, and I've got them in a padded box, and I'm going to put my hand into the box. Not the first time I've done that. Even she found that funny. I'm going to put my hand into the box, and I'm going to move it round. And boys, when you say stop, I'm going to pick up whatever's one that's in my hand at that point. So one of you say stop.
Stop.
Okay. And our winner is Stephen Andrews. So, Stephen Andrews, congratulations. I think you got in contact via the Facebook page, so we will drop you a message and we'll put you in contact with the Terrors, and you will get a T-shirt out, and they are a cracking T-shirt. I think Ryan Champion's bought one. That's what we see. We don't get freebies. We don't get
freebies.
When we get
freebies,
we give them away. That's what we do. So, Stephen Andrews, congratulations on that. Right, we're going to come to Jack Penguins. Any other business?
I'm going to take a leaf out of Tony's book and do two, but the first one's very short. Okay. That's okay. The first one's just a pointer to our Christmas edition, which comes out on Wednesday. We've got a 7-page WRC review. We've got a Scottish Rally Championship review. We've got a British Rallycross review. And we've even got a feature on a Vauxhall Zafira that won a rally. So it's an absolute must. You've got to
Mate, I'll be honest
Wednesday.
With you. I was right. I was with you all the way going, this sounds brilliant. And then the last one where you went, yeah, and there's a Vauxhall Zafira that's won an event. You might lose a few people at that point, Jack. You should always start low and build up high. That's what you should do. You never go backwards.
It's meant to add intrigue.
Now, let me add to the intrigue. The man who, there's a very, very strong undercurrent of very experienced co-drivers that work at M Sport. And obviously, John Millington is very, very well documented. Now, John Millington effectively retired from being full-time in WRC. And the man that kind of worked alongside him is a replacement guy called Ian Tully. Ian Tully is actually the man that's co-driving in this Vauxhall Zafira. So, pick it up. It's interesting. And Ian's a great guy as well. So, go on, Jack, your second one.
But did you just say one of my features was interesting? I feel honoured.
Let's not get too carried away. Jack sees the goodwill and all that. Okay.
Okay. Well, my other Any Other Business is a happy birthday one. You know, I love to do birthdays for my Any Other Business. Today is Andrew Cowan's birthday. So I know Ryan knows a little bit about Andrew Cowan. I think you left Mitsubishi before he came, didn't you? You said, Ryan.
I did, yes.
Yeah. So he's 80 today. Wow. And for anyone who doesn't know Andrew, he's Scottish. Grew up with Jim Clark and did a lot of Scottish rallying as a youngster. Won a couple of Scottish championships and then went into some endurance rallying and won the famous London to Sydney rally. I think he won the longest ever rally as well, the South American rally in the late 70s, which was something stupid like 20,000 miles or something really silly. And then started Rally Art Europe what would become Rally Art Europe in 1983, which was the kind of British home of Mitsubishi and turned into their WRC programs. So very happy birthday to Andrew Cowan. I know a lot of drivers and a lot of people owe their support to Andrew for employing them over the years and things like that. So just happy birthday
for
me.
There you go. Nice, easy one. Ryan, do you want me to do mine, or are you ready to do yours?
I'll do mine if you want, and then we'll build yours
mine,
up to a crescendo
at the end. Mine's a little bit sad.
We'll come back to yours in a minute then. I mean, mine's really just following up on last week. We talked last week about a couple of up and coming driver shootouts, and you know, these are a really important part of our sport. It's always difficult for drivers to get a leg up in the world, if you like, in the world of rallying these days. So anytime there's a prize drive, some sort of financial support for drivers, it's obviously very keenly fought and important for any winner. And we saw the DMAT shootout at M Sport last week. So we had a number of British drivers in there for a supported drive in the Drive DMAC Fiesta Trophy. Unfortunately, we didn't see a British winner. That went to a French driver, so Nicolas Camin. He won the drive. Has some experience in the Drive DMAC Trophy already, which I think went in his favour. But fantastic performances by both George Lepley and Cameron Davis to push him really close. And you know, two young British drivers who both driven in the Fiesta ST Trophy in BTRDA this year. They both impressed and were very, very close to winning that prize. So unfortunately they didn't get the drive, but keep going, guys, because you're both obviously doing the right things and did an impressive job. So well done. And just finally to finish off, then it was also the Hyundai New Zealand shootout last week, and that the winner of that drive went to Job Quantuck, and he will get back in from backing, support, mentoring from Hayden Padden. He'll get the support of Hyundai New Zealand and get to drive that i20 AP4 car in some rounds of the New Zealand Championship. So well,
there you go. There you go. Just on that, by the way, Scott Newman dropped us a little message in, and basically, I'll just do a bit of a name check. Scott, thanks for that. He's talking about Nandan saying no chance of 2016 Hyundai's being used in the Privateers Cup, although with VW, things can change very quickly. Finally, perhaps, if you want some more info, the AP4s and where it is, let me know a little bit about this. It's a complicated situation, as all the AP4 cars aren't created equally. New Zealand cars, like the ones that Hayden Padden's, won't be eligible in Australia. So apparently,
can I add to Ryan's any of his results? Well,
no, go on.
We've not got time. With the drive team match out, I think Ryan's definitely been reading MN this week, because you've got a nice big story on Cameron and George doing very well in the shootout. But I was very surprised that John Armstrong wasn't mentioned, having gone into the shootout again this year. He won it last year, and as you know, has won prize drives in an R5 car next year through winning rounds of the Drive DMAT Trophy. And I've not heard his name mentioned once when it comes to the shootout, which I find shocking. I can't believe no one's mentioned him. I think everyone in the UK knows how quick John is, and if you don't, then just go back and look at some of the results over the years, or go and watch some of his onboard and look at the results this year. He's actually won rounds of the Drive DMAT Trophy and not been mentioned once when it comes to the shootout.
Yeah, no, good point. A couple of things just with regards to the name checks that Ryan's just done there. Obviously, George Lepley. I managed to have dinner with Jason, his dad, at a function that Ryan and I were at, which him and his good lady wife put on, Gemma, and Jack was invited, but he didn't turn up. Jason listens to us. You know, I haven't asked for a while, folks. I normally say, you know, where do you listen to us and stuff like that? And people tweet in and they send us messages, which is lovely. Jason saved us, and he wanted to let me know that he listens to us in the bath. So, thanks for that, Jace. an image that you'll all have now, that Jason Lepley naked listening to our podcast. Anyway, a couple of other bits and pieces, well, a little bit of tidying up. We flippantly mentioned the fact that Silver Firm was 5 days. We were corrected. It's actually 7 days. Again, Gary Boyd, thank you for putting us straight on that one. Apologies. I did take a bit of a punt at that one. My any other business, it's quite sad, actually. It's an ex-teammate of mine. I only did three rallies with him in 2003. Swedish guy called Andreas Fredriksson, who very sadly passed away this week. Andreas was, Anders Fredriksson, sorry, Anders, God bless. Anders was a great guy. He did the Polo Challenge with us, and he did a lot of racing as well, radical racing and things like that. And the last time I seen him was at the Pirelli Rally. He was over a couple of years back, and he was talking about coming back over, and he did have some health issues back in 2003, and he fought cancer and everything else, and unfortunately, it's what claimed him. This time round, it didn't quite happen for him this time round. And such a lovely, lovely guy. And thoughts to everybody over there. And as I say, I'll miss having our chats when we did meet up. But there you go. So that was my any other business this week. Hats off to you, sir. I hope you're well, wherever you are. Right, so that's it for this week for us boys. Next week, as I say, it will be the quiz. So folks, if you've got questions you want to catch out, our panel on, which will be Zav McCartan, Ryan Champion, Jack Bengen. I will be the quiz master. Of course I will. And anybody who's feeling mischievous, please don't send them ones with tricky names that I need to pronounce. You know how it's all going to go wrong. So anybody who's going to be...
Oh, now you've started it, haven't you? Yeah, it's any Russian, Polish, Lithuanian drivers you can think of, by all means, you know, send us the questions.
And on that note...
Christoph Holovich.
There you go. I've done that one. That's easy. So no mischief with regards to names is what I'm saying. So get those in. Please DM them to me personally at TonySimpson74, because the boys do see the Twitter as well. We all see the Twitter. So it would be unfair. I don't want to give anybody an advantage. There you go. Jack, I have plenty of coffee next week. Don't be arriving for next week's podcast all sleepy and needing your Farley's Rusks and needing an 11 o'clock nap, as you did with this one. So, you need to be on your toes next week, because Ryan Champion, he's a born winner. He's the clue's in the name. So...
There's, I don't think there's any doubt Ryan Champion would beat me in a rallying quiz. I think we've already
you're very canny. You play very left field, and I think this is going to be quite good fun. And don't necessarily think that the questions I'm going to set are going to be dead straight questions either. By the way, so.
They can't all be the VW Polo BBC Four Cup in 2002, because none of them.
It wasn't BBC Four Cup in 2002. It was the Castro Polo Challenge in 2002, and Ryan was in the Puma. In fact, I actually tweeted out a photograph from a program I found from BRC Live in 2003, and the photograph is the front cover of the program, and Ryan Champion's little face is there, and he looks like he's doing breathing exercises about to give birth. So you see the picture. You must have seen it. Yeah, no, don't you look like you've got that facial expression when you're doing breathing exercises? That's why. So I thought I'd put it out there anyway. So folks, sit back, relax, enjoy the rest of the podcast with the lovely Bex Williams coming up, who's going to be talking to us all about her view of obviously the season that we've just finished, and obviously what's going to be coming up in 2017. So sit back, relax, enjoy. You know where we live. It's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter and facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. And again, thank you for entering our competition. Thank you to We The Terrors for putting up that t-shirt. Devastated I didn't order one in time. I'm going to have to order one from those guys, but there you go. So boys, get your pencils sharp for next week, and we'll be back with the quiz, and we'll be back with Bex Williams after this break.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks. Accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to the final section of Absolute Rally. And of course, I was just about to say, because I keep on getting mixed up, I keep on claiming that this is our last episode. It's not. We're actually doing one more next week, which is going to effectively be the Absolute Rally pub quiz. So she's not our final guest of the season. Well, I guess she is, because she's not doing the pub quiz with us. So not for the first time this year. Welcome back to Absolute Rally, Bex Williams.
Thank you very much. And it's a damn shame I'm not doing the pub quiz, because I'm really good at those.
I'll be honest with you. I've got Jack Bennion. I've got Ryan Champion, who basically outfox one another on a pretty much a weekly basis.
Yeah, but are the questions going to be rally based or are they general knowledge?
No,
because I think I'd put my money on Ryan for the rally knowledge.
Yeah,
because his brain's maybe a little bit older.
Yeah,
although he doesn't look older, but his brain's a little bit older. But if you're talking general knowledge, I don't know who I'd bet on.
Well, it is going to be rally based, but it's going to be, because I'm the quiz master, I'll be honest with you, right? It's probably who can debate their point better. We'll get.
Or it could be
points.
A long show then.
It could be a long show. It could be an epic podcast. It could be somewhere near 10 hours. And then I'm with the boys, because the boys are actually then doing the Christmas Stages rally up at Croft. And I'm
Brilliant.
Technically meant to be their service crew on the 27th of December. So, it's going to be interesting. But, I think the atmosphere of that rally will depend on who wins the quiz. I think it's fair to say. There you go.
Or could be tense times.
It could be tense. Most definitely. Thank you for joining us. Now, I'm sorry, because I do feel like we have woke you from your slumber a little bit. You've been a busy lady, and everybody obviously listens to our program, obviously fully aware of what you were up to yesterday. You were at the Toyota launch, which is just lovely to say. It's nice to say that we're welcoming a new team. So how was the Toyota launch?
I have to say, it was lovely to be there. I felt very honoured to be asked to host the whole gig. And then, it's the pressure of hosting a launch of a brand new manufacturer coming back. Well, not brand new. They've been in the championship before. Of course, everyone knows Toyota's history, but this is now, the rebirth of the brand coming back into WRC. And I flew out to Helsinki on Monday. And we had a big dress rehearsal yesterday morning and going through everything. And you just walk into the hall where we are, Finlandia Hall, and you see the stage, you see the logo. You know, we heard the car. The car was going to be driven on stage, which I always like. At a launch, I want to hear a car. I don't want to see it on a stage. I don't want to see it just, you know, sat there not doing anything with a sheet over it. That's not my idea of a launch at all. I want to hear a car. And we certainly did that yesterday. And I felt really privileged to be able to see, well, to be part of, obviously, the rehearsal beforehand, but see the car being driven onto the stage three times yesterday, which, okay, it didn't come any great distance, don't get me wrong, but still, just hearing the roar of the engine and watching it spin 360 was, yeah, it was something quite special. Juho Hanninen was the rehearsal driver to drive it onto the stage for us. And every time he kind of came up onto the stage, he did a different wave just to all of us rehearsal people. It was a royal wave, first of all, which was very good. He does look very royal, I have to say. But it was a great atmosphere yesterday morning because all the drivers were there, bar Jari Matti and Mika Anttila. So they were testing still yesterday morning. They were flying in for the launch and then flying back out to continue testing. So Juho Hanninen was very much playing the part of Jari Matti Latvala because he was due to drive the car onto the stage yesterday. This is a little bit of an in secret now because Jari Matti was meant to be the drive the car on, you know, pop out of the car. Whoa, it's Jari Matti Latvala. Not that it was a huge surprise, I don't think, to many that he was going to be a Toyota driver. But, you know, a lot of the team still believe that, oh, you know, well, people don't actually, they don't know for sure. They're not for sure. We don't want to reveal it yet. We don't, maybe we shouldn't have Latvala's name on the back of the car. I was like, yeah, you should. And of course, it just does rally, Tony. Flights take a mind of their own. And news started to filter in during the morning after we'd done our big technical rehearsal that Jari Matti might not make it at all.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, you could hear it, the kind of the silence in the room was just like, hold on, our lead driver for the whole thing may not be here. Luckily, he did get on to his connecting flight, but then news was coming in that he would be late. And you can't really delay a launch. You get journalists to come at a certain time. You've flown them in from all areas of the world. And there were almost 300 journalists there yesterday. It was in, wow. I've never seen a launch as well attended as the Toyota launch yesterday. I've been to many in my 15 years. I've never seen as many people there as there were yesterday. So to not have your lead driver was something that was going to be, well, just a little bit nail-biting. And as the clock was ticking down to us starting the launch, he'd landed, he was en route from the airport. All of a sudden, yeah, there's a little bit of traffic. Is he going to make it? Is he going to make it on time to drive the car onto the stage? Sadly not. So Juho Hanninen stepped into that role. He'd done it three times in the morning. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
So he did that. And basically, if you've seen any footage of the Toyota launch, they had a big stage and they had a screen at the back, which then opened for the car to emerge through, which is what Juho did. And then about a couple of minutes afterwards, we got the nod that Jari Matti was in the building and we could announce him onto the stage. And so the doors opened at the back. And Jari Matti and Mika are standing on the stage, but just in their normal clothes, jeans and a T-shirt. I don't think it was quite the impact that the team wanted, but it was funny nonetheless. You know, you can't, you never can predict what's going to happen at rallies. You can't predict what's going to happen in real life. And the fact that they were a little bit late and didn't even have time to put their overalls on was quite amusing. But, you know, it's full dedication from the team and from Jari Matti. You know, the launch wasn't going to stand in the way of getting him seat time, which is all important at the moment.
Absolutely. I just love the conspiracy theorist if he wouldn't have got the, you imagine
well, you know,
like Twitter imploding and, you know, Facebook and everything. Oh my God, he's not going there after all. It was a curveball. And yeah, it's almost like one of those Scooby-Doo moments where they pull the mask off. No, I'm really Jari Matti Latvala. No, I'm not. It's kind of one of those moments. So I'm glad he got there because I don't think Twitter could have handled it.
Do you know what? I already saw messages of why he appeared in his normal clothes. Oh, well, he's still under Volkswagen's contract. He can't possibly wear Toyota overalls. And I thought, really, honestly, come on. It's just because he was late. But yeah. People immediately, whatever you do, the slightest thing people will pick up on and they roll with it. And it becomes, as you say, a conspiracy theory. I find it quite amusing. But yeah, he got there in time anyway. And, you know, as I said, it was no surprise, really, was it, that he was going to be announced as the driver. You know, they hadn't confirmed it by press release at all, or they hadn't done anything. They just wanted to reveal him at the launch. And he was, you know, I spoke to him yesterday, and what I found with him, it has been a tough couple of weeks. Obviously, for all the Volkswagen drivers, it's been a few weeks of major upheaval. None of them expected this. The team, Volkswagen, didn't expect what happened a couple of weeks ago. So it's been a massive time of stress, trying to sort things out. But Jari Matti has this renewed sense of vigor. You know, he's a delicate soul. He's a delicate character. You know, you put him on the stages and, my God, he goes for it. And he's exceptionally focused, and he can be quite aggressive. Not that you see the aggression, but it's just all in this steely focus. But he's a delicate soul. At the end of the day, he will sit and he will chat to you for hours. And you know that he's the kind of man. Malcolm Wilson always said Jari Matti is the man who can never lie. He could never get away with lying. He's way too honest. And the honesty was pouring out of him yesterday. He's so looking forward to the new challenge that he has. I think he's really reveling in the fact that he's the lead driver at the team as well. You know, that car will Juho Hannanen has done a great job of testing that car and developing that car all year. And that information has been passed on to Jari Matti now, and he will put his own stamp on that car as the development continues as they go into next year. But it was nice to see a really refreshed, gunning for it Jari Matti yesterday. Because sometimes he can be up, he can be down. But yesterday was all about positivity. It was good to see.
I think he needed it, didn't he?
I think he did. He,
there was definitely a point in his career, and you know, I've never met anybody who's got a bad word to say about Jari.
No.
he's such a lovely, lovely man, and we all kind of root for. No matter where he is, he's one of those drivers. And funny enough, at the top of the podcast, we were talking about whether Sebastian Ogier now would actually get some more fans due to the fact he was at M Sport, you know, almost a smaller team and not this big, massive machine and everything else, because he has got a bit of a cool surroundings around him. You know, people don't tend to warm to him sometimes, but Jari's never had that. But Jari's always been kind of tinged with that disappointment of nearly, but it's never quite there. So this number one status, I just hope it doesn't weigh too heavy on his shoulders.
I don't think it will. I think he's at the point in his career now where he has achieved so much. He's achieved, you know, many WRC wins, but also he's been through the absolute doom of it all as well. You know, the bad days for Jari Matti Latvala are really bad days. You know, you look at some events, even this year, where things have gone horribly wrong for him, and he carries the weight of it. Sometimes it used to really affect him. He'd crash cars. And I can remember, I think it was Corsica, where he broke his thumb. This was many, many years ago, back in the Stobart days. I think it was this rally, I might be wrong, but he went into some Armco and he just burst into tears because he crashed. And he used to take, you know, defeat and things going wrong, he used to take them to heart. He really did. You know, there would be a cloud over Latvala. Like, I don't know if you ever watched The Flumps when you were little, Tony. But
of course I did. Of course
I can't remember which Flump used to have the cloud. There was an episode. It was my favourite episode. I still remember it. But it was one of the youngest Flumps, and he had this cloud which followed him around. He was trying to get rid of it, and it wouldn't go. And it always makes me think of Jari Matti now, because that's the way he used to be. Things went wrong, and he would take it. Carry it with him for weeks, but that's all gone now. That's completely changed. You know, things go wrong, within a couple of hours he's sorted it out. I think at Rally Australia, first stage, when things went alarmingly wrong for him, when he clipped the back of the car and broke his suspension, he was very angry with himself when he came back to the service break, midpoint service. He was just, you know, he was angry with himself, and I thought, oh, you've got to shift that, because you've got to crack on this afternoon. And then he said to, I think, Emma, one of our stage end reporters, during the afternoon, he said, yep, I was very upset with myself this morning. I was very angry, but I got over it. And I'm okay now. I mean, it's a classic Jari Matti line. It's just, he analyses everything, but he does bounce back from things very quickly. And I think he can very much handle the pressure of leading that team. I think he'll relish it. I think it'll be good for him to be the man that is number one in a team, and everyone is looking at him to bring the results in. I think, you know, in Volkswagen there's a very different dynamic. Seb was always going to be number one there, and he very quickly stamped his authority on that team by taking the championship win in the first year. And Jari Matti, in a sense, couldn't keep up with that. There was a huge momentum behind Seb, and Jari Matti was always trying to beat him, and yes, he did beat him on occasion, but it was never... the dynamic there was a funny one, because Jari Matti is a sensitive guy. Seb knew that. And as much as he supported him, and he did, he could also, if he wanted to, psychologically, really put him down and really affect him. And we saw that on a couple of occasions. Oh, you know, they're psyching each other out. And if there was a psych battle, Seb would win it. Yeah. Because he's so cool, calm and collected. And he's able to compartmentalize his emotions. He can leave them at the start line, and when he's on the stage, nothing affects him. Whereas Jari Matti is different. He's more sensitive. He does take things to heart a bit more, although he is able, I think, now that the more he goes on, he's able to not take that with him into the stages. But it's taken a long time to get there.
I think what's fascinating as well is that we forget now as well, Jari has gone through so many evolutions of the World Rally Championship.
Oh, you know, my God, yes.
You know, he was there with the Focuses, obviously, prior to that. You know, he was doing British Championship in a Focus, and then he went Super 1600 in the JWRC. And so he's been around a long time. He's not actually that. Yari's what, 32 now, is he? Is that about right?
Yeah, 31, 32? Yeah, he would be about 31, 32. He always keeps telling me, I'm getting old now.
Trust me, Jari, when you get to my age, that's when you're old. But I tell you what I've found interesting, and maybe there's been a conscious side to all this with what's gone on with Toyota and everything else. How was Tommy yesterday? Was Tommy in good spirits? Did he embrace it? Of course he embraced it, but did he look happy? Did he feel comfortable now with his driver lineup?
Yeah, definitely. He definitely felt happy with the driver lineup. I think, you know, it's the culmination of everything has come together now, and they're almost ready to go. Well, you say almost ready to go in Monte Carlo. They have a busy few weeks. I don't think Christmas will be happening for many of the team. You know, maybe they will have the Christmas day off, but they have so much work to do to get ready for Rally Monte Carlo. They want to make sure everything is in place. They want to make sure they have every single box ticked. It's a very busy period. But no, he was on really good form yesterday. Great spirits, laughing, joking, but busy. You know, Mäkinen is a busy man. He was on the phone a lot of the time, still sorting things out, meeting journalists. I mean, he talked from as soon as the launch finished. I think he talked for about 3 hours solid to journalists who were asking him all kinds of questions, as you can well imagine. But yeah, I think, you know, he's in a good place right now. I think the team is in a good place. It was great to see a lot of them there yesterday. And usually, you know, we had engineers and designers on the stage yesterday, Japanese and British. Tom Fowler, who worked with M Sport for many years, he was Mikko Hirvonen's number one engineer. He was on stage yesterday. Simon Carrier, who also worked with the M Sport team back in the day, from a design aspect, was there and was on the stage. So they really wanted to show the world that, you know, it's not just the drivers and the co-drivers. It's very much a team effort. There were Japanese engineers on stage yesterday, and they wanted to reveal these people. It's not about keeping behind the scenes, let's say, secret. They wanted everybody to see these guys. And also, journalists were able to speak to them afterwards. There were quite a few sessions with the engineers as well as the drivers and the co-drivers.
Do you get the feeling that... what's the official team? What are we going to be calling them? Because obviously there's a lot. We've got Tommy Mäkinen racing there. We've got TMG. We've got what are we going to be calling first and foremost? Just so I can get the terminology right before I go any further with this.
That's what I was wondering when I was going there. To be honest, but it's Toyota Gazoo Racing.
Toyota Gazoo Racing. Do you feel that Toyota Gazoo Racing are going to be kind of quite an open team? Obviously, we've been around the service park over the years, and you've done it far more than me, but you know, there was teams that were very open, and there was teams that perhaps weren't always quite as open. Where do you see Toyota and all this?
Yeah, it's a difficult one right now to say, really. You know, because you have two different influences within the team. You obviously have the Japanese element, and you know, culturally, Japanese are exceptionally different to us in the way they go about things. They want to be perceived as the friendly team, and they certainly were yesterday. They were very open especially with a lot of things that they were prepared to talk about yesterday. You've got the one side of it, the Japanese side, and that culture has to be respected, and they do operate in a different way to us Europeans. Then you have, you know, the Finnish element and the European element. And you're meshing the two of those together. And it's going to be an interesting dynamic, I think, over the years. And it's something that's really working now. It's something which I think has taken a little while to work cohesively, but it does work really well now. So I can't really say what they're going to be like in the service park next year. You know, the whole plan and their whole objective is to be the friendly team to invite people to share as much of their WRC experience as possible. I think it'll be pretty open. I'm hoping it will, because, you know, you do have some teams, you're right, around the service park, everyone is different. Some are sharing, some will give you lots of information. Some teams hold it back quite a bit. I'm not sure where Toyota are going to rank in there right now, but certainly from what I've seen over the past few days, I would think that we will be getting a lot of information out of them, I would think.
Which is good, because I think it kind of adds to it. You know, I'm always fearful that the bigger the WRC gets again, the more closer we'll get to that kind of almost that circuit racing kind of world of, you know, elitism and things like that. And that's always my big fear while we want it to get bigger and we want it to grow and we want more manufacturers and stuff, I just hope and pray we don't get into that kind of situation of dare I say,
F1. Yeah, well, to be honest, I had that fear when Volkswagen came in. I have to say, when they did start the championship, when they were coming into their first year, the training wheels year with the Skodas, when they started that year, I thought, okay, German team, Volkswagen, huge manufacturer, huge brand. And I thought, I hope that they're not, you know, we knew they had a huge budget, a lot of money, and that their service area would be, you know, something to behold. And they were planning to do all these various things. I thought, I really hope that they're not going to make the sport untouchable and elitist, as you say, and inaccessible. And it was quite perverse, the complete opposite. Volkswagen, I think, are the team, the only team I've ever seen. Okay, I've worked directly in WRC for 15 years, but I followed the sport for a long time before that. But I've never seen any other team bring rally to the people like Volkswagen did, in the sense that they were so inclusive with the amount of information that they would give out to journalists, but more importantly, out to fans. So you had your videos, your website, all the Facebook, all the Twitter stuff, everything that they would be doing through the Rally the World website to make sure that people all over the world, whatever language they spoke, felt that they were close to the rally. And that's going to be a massive loss next year. Can't underestimate how much of a loss that's going to be.
Now, we watched a little video last night, and we're going to segue quite nicely here. The family team that we know is M Sport.
Yes.
There was a little video that was put out with Malcolm making the announcement that obviously we now know of. Obviously, Sebastien Ogier has gone there. It was a lovely video, and it was kind of it was quite nice to be part of it. We all knew what was coming. We all knew what the punchline was going to be, and there was going to be a twist right at the end. But how do you see that happening now? And what I mean is, and you've been very close to M Sport over the years. I know you have, and we all know people there. It's one of those teams where, you know, it's kind of like 5 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
If you don't know somebody that works at M Sport, it's a miracle as far as I'm concerned, because it's very, very odd, because everybody in rallying have all had connections of some sort. Now, M Sport have kind of gone about the business over the last few years, very similar, I guess, to what they did, I suppose, towards the latter days of the Focus, where they just were there, but they kind of perhaps, is it fair to say, accepted that they may not be right at the forefront. I know it's an awkward one for you to say, but certainly to me, there was definitely, you know, we're there, we're doing what we can with what we've got. Now the dynamic is completely different, isn't it?
It is. I mean, they have a world champion driver. And, you know, you'd look at Sebastien Ogier and what he can do. And, you know, you look at the rallies this year that he's been at, that he's won from first on the road with 2 days of sweeping. And I'm sure many people will go, oh, yeah, you know, whatever. But honestly, the amount of people I've spoken to in the past few months who've gone, oh yeah, but so what? The man is incredible. He honestly is. His skill is just jaw-dropping. To be able to win rallies, gravel events sometimes, and not many he won, but in fact hardly any, but to be able to be in position to challenge for a win on a gravel event where he's been first on the road for 2 days blew me away. You know, his leap up the leaderboard was just epic to watch. He's now in a brand new team, and he's in a great team with M Sport. They have such a wealth of knowledge and talent within that team. But, and this is a difficult thing to say for me, but they've never had, in the past few years, they haven't had a driver behind the wheel who can go out there and properly challenge for wins. They've had dynamic drivers. They've had drivers who've had fantastic speed. Tanak, for instance, who is part of the team this year, you know, was at M Sport, and we saw some sheer brilliance for him, but we never saw consistent brilliance from him. And now he's, you know, come on as a driver even more. Gosh, with Seb in the seat, you would like to think that, yes, they're going to win rallies. There's no question about it. It's all going to go up a notch for the team. I think it's going to be, is it going to be a bit of a shell shock for them having a world champion in the team with what he brings to the team, the expectation that he will also bring to the team, and they will be able to deliver whatever he wants, I'm sure, because they have the technical nous there, okay? They've not, in the past few years, had massive budget. Will that change now? Will they be able to draw on some more budget because they have a world champion in the team? I hope so. I really hope so. And I hope it all pays off for Malcolm, because he's pulled an absolute blinder getting Seb into the team. It was one of his biggest regrets that in, I think it was 2010, 2011, I can't remember which year it was, that he didn't sign Ogier. Ogier continued on at the time with Citroën. And he was, yeah, kicking himself a little bit that he wasn't able to get him on the books then. He'd already missed the opportunity of Sebastian Loeb a few years previous. Loeb had come, he'd gone to M Sport, but unfortunately they couldn't sign him either. And now he'd lost Ogier as well. And he could see the talent that Ogier had. And this was back in 2010. So, what, a year after his junior championship win. And he was kicking himself, and he mentioned it last year. We were talking about, or it could be the year before, we were talking about Eric Camerley. And, you know, Malcolm's had a lot of faith in Eric, which is why he was part of the team last year. And he said to me, I missed out the opportunity on two fast Frenchmen. I don't want to miss the opportunity again with Camerley. And he could obviously see something in Eric that maybe not a lot of other people could see at the time. And maybe still can't see right now, because he, you know, when you look at his year, it's, you could say maybe it's been a bit mediocre, but he certainly wasn't going to take that opportunity when it came up just a month ago, the opportunity to sign Ogier again. He pulled out all the stops. He didn't come to Australia. He was meant to come. He was back at M Sport, trying everything he possibly could to put the wheels in motion and put everything in place to be able to sign Ogier. Ogier came, they tested not far from my house, actually. I was gutted because I'd left to go somewhere on a trip that day. And then all the pictures come out of Ogier at Walters Arena, which is 20 minutes from home. Yeah, I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy with that because I could have gone there. And, you know, hats off to Malcolm, I have to say. I think he's done a superb job in signing him, getting him as part of the team. It's a huge morale boost for the team. You could see that from the video that they put out, that little home video. You know, Malcolm revealing at the end that Seb is driving for the team. And, you know, the whole workshop is shouting and whooping and hollering because they have a world champion behind the wheel. The feedback he's going to be able to give them on that car is going to be incredible. And the results he will be able to deliver, there's no question about that, is going to give the team a massive, massive boost. It's just what they need.
Absolutely. Now, one thing we've debated at the top of the show, and I think the world of Twitter and the world of Facebook and everything else, which is just a whole debating forum, isn't it, these days, is what's going to happen to Andreas?
Oh, this really does pain me. It does a little because, you know, the man who's just won Rally Australia, and and won by a mile as well. He was so dominant and so confident throughout the whole event. And he could be, well, he is at the moment, left out in the cold. At this present point in time, he has no drive. His management company, Even Management, were at the launch yesterday. Of course, they're looking after Esa-Pekka Lappi as well. And Esa-Pekka is part of the Toyota team, so they were there for him. And, you know, they were working very hard yesterday to try and get a deal in place for Andreas. Where does he go? I mean, Tony, the rumours, you know, float around about this possible Volkswagen private team. If it happens, if it doesn't happen, we don't know. You know, I saw something on Twitter earlier on. I didn't even read it properly about it might not happen now. I just don't know. I don't know exactly what's going on with that.
I think the problem is, as you've just correctly pointed out, there's so much stuff that gets regurgitated now. And I feel like we've almost got information overload. It's not the first time I've said this, because trying to sort the wheat from the chaff is very, very difficult. Even for you guys, you know, for you to say that, I think kind of brings home the fact, what hope have we got? You're in the eye of the storm almost.
Well,
and even you're left scratching your head, you know?
Yeah, I am. There are a couple of things I know that I can't talk about with you, but mainly, I mean, when we talk about this Volkswagen private team, you know, there's not a huge amount I do know. I spoke with a couple of people yesterday who had worked within the team, and they were still very much like, well, it's just a case of the whole team is ready if someone is there with the money. If someone comes with the money, then they basically get a very similar team to what we saw last year, or what we saw with the Volkswagen outing. It's just a case of that money being in place. NASA is the focus at the moment, isn't he? You know, he's the man who could have the key to this funding and open the door for us seeing private Volkswagens next year. But it's a lot of money that's on the table, a lot of money that's being asked to run a team for a whole year. And that's just a year.
Yeah, I think we've spoke about this quite a bit. Whether there could be some deal done, and I know obviously they've got to outwardly look like they can't put a penny in and et cetera, but if somebody paid for that car for next year, then it's homologated, because that's ultimately what needs to happen.
It needs to be
out on every round. So even if they got somebody to get it over the line through a year of competition, then that would effectively pay for the homologation.
Yeah, it's a vicious circle, the homologation thing, because you need a manufacturer to homologate, and it can't compete without that, of course. But, you know, it's still, for me, in my mind, it's, okay, Volkswagen have pulled out of the championship, and, you know, they made no bones about the fact that they did not want to be seen to be competing or doing anything. You know, the statements that came out, first of all, were, we will not be a private team. There will not be privateers in these Volkswagens in the 2017. That was the initial statement. And then as the weeks tick on, you know, it changes round a little bit. And then, you know, when Seb had the possibility of last week, you know, that rumour was quite strong, wasn't it, of Seb maybe being in the private Volkswagen team. I thought, oh, hold on a second. This doesn't sound right to me. He's tested the Ford, he's tested the Toyota, and, oh, hands up, he could still be staying at Volkswagen. It all seemed very wrong to me, and just not the right way about going about things, about doing things. It seemed underhand, in a way.
Yep.
It really did. It smacked of that. I mean, I personally hope that we do see a privateer team, because I'd like to see more cars competing against each other. And I want to see that Volkswagen, that 2017 car. They put so much effort into it. And you know it's going to be a fantastic car with the wealth of knowledge of the people creating that car behind it. You know it's going to be good. So for it just to be sat in a box next year, I mean, we talked about it during Rally Australia in our minds. And if you remember the final scene from Indiana Jones, the first film, with the Ark, Raiders of the Lost Ark, where the Ark is just put into a big storage warehouse in a box. That's how I'm imagining, or that's how I was imagining the car would just be shipped off, packed up, and bye-bye 2017. But now we have this new possibility, and time is ticking away. Entries close for Monte Carlo Friday. If they're gonna go with it, they need to go with it now.
Yeah, Yeah, a decision does have to be made. Just if I can just nicely go back to just the Toyota thing just for one second. Was there any announcement with regards to the young drivers that they've been putting through their young driver program? Was anything said about those?
No, nothing at all. It was very much focused on the main team and the main drivers. So no, there was no mention of, yeah, as you say, the junior drivers that have been through that program. So Teemu Suninen was obviously one of them. Eric Hamerly was one. Is this a program you're talking about? Yes.
There was
Japanese.
The two Japanese kids. Yeah.
No, there was no mention of it yesterday at all. And to be honest, I didn't ask either. So it's a bit of bad on my part. But I was very much focused on what I was doing yesterday, which was hosting and trying to be jolly, happy, and remembering Japanese names on stage.
Yeah, do you know what? It's a bit of a standing joke that obviously I do struggle with pronunciations, Bex. I don't shy away from it, but I'm ballsy with them.
Yeah,
I'm
you've got to be though. You've just got to go for it.
And I must admit, that's why I said the Toyota youngsters. I know, I ironically know obviously one of them is Toshi Arai's son. Now, I used to work with Toshi. So as far as I'm concerned, it's Arai. So I know there was Arai, and there was also, who was the guy who Phil Hall sat alongside? Young British co-driver.
Do you know what? This is really bad, isn't it? I haven't got my iPad or laptop in front of me now to look, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
No, it's all right. It's all right. But there was no announcement with regards to them. Bex, as ever, you and I could probably talk for about 14 hours, but we've already done over half an hour as it is.
God.
So I know. Listen, before we let you go, I need to get some of your moments, your favourite moments, perhaps, from this year's WRC.
Ooh, favourite moments. Gosh, yeah, it's a tough one. I have to say, it is a tough one. You know, all of the year is a bit of a favourite moment. It's still a privilege to work on the championship. It is. To be honest, some of the favourite moments come from a rally I wasn't actually at this year. I missed a few due to my mum's ill health, bless her. She passed away earlier this year, and I cared for her a lot during the summer, so I didn't travel to many events. Poland I missed, but I watched the final stage of Poland live at home, just watched it on telly, which is a first for me because I'm always on events. And to watch Ojt Tanak wander off into the field after the final stage with his lovely lady alongside him, obviously, you know, having a bit of a moment, having a bit of a downer moment because he'd missed out on a win in Poland. And then to see Seb run after him and give him some positive words, and then all the rest of the drivers to follow, and Seb carrying him on his shoulders. That's the iconic moment of the whole year for me, because it's exactly what rally is about. It's the highs and the lows, but it's also the generosity of spirit that the other drivers have. You know, they are arch rivals when you get them into competition mode. But at the end of the day, when rally is done and dusted like that, and someone does need a bit of a pick-me-up, and Ojt did, you know, it's down to the drivers to do it. And you mentioned earlier in the show about Seb not having many fans. It's true that people take a while to warm to him, and some people don't warm to him at all, because he does come across as a little bit ruthless, maybe. That's his competition spirit. That's why he's a champion. That's why he's a winner. But you sit him down and have a cup of coffee with him, he is such a nice guy, and you can't stress that enough. I really can't stress that enough. And for him to go and do that with Ojt Tanak is testament to that. You know, if he was such a heartless, ruthless, horrible person, he would have just left him go off into the field and going, oh, well, he didn't win the rally, so what? But no, he's the first man to go over there. And I did ask him what he'd said to him when I went to the next rally. And I asked Ojt Tanak what he'd said to him. And Ojt said that he'd said, you know, you've done such a fantastic job here, and, you know, your time will come. You will have many wins. You will have many wins. And that's all it needed. Wow. That's all it needed to, you know, give Ojt the little boost that he needed to come back and, you know, join the guys again. So that's my standout moment of the whole year. Nothing to do with competition on the stages. It's all to do with the spirit of rally.
I'm going to share that one with you. Because I'll be honest with you, I've kind of been, I couldn't get to one. Seeing kind of results, seeing Craig Breen, having known Craig for such a long time as well, and seeing, you know, Craig up there, you know, on the podium and things like that, and obviously then seeing Hayden, all these guys, I suppose, seeing the new blood come through, which we need to see it. Of course, you know, it's, while it's great to have a dominant champion, we also need plenty of people keeping him honest, and that's what I kind of really, and Oik definitely falls into that as well, and obviously that it is an iconic image, and it's going to be, you know, it was, you know, the beauty these days, of course, is everybody can film this stuff on phones, and there was lots of different angles of it and everything else. And as you say, it was a genuinely lovely moment.
It was a lovely moment. But there's been lots. You mentioned Craig and Hayden there. I mean, you know, the Craig thing for me was just fantastic to see him achieve. What he did in Finland was something so, so special. And his reaction, I love the story. I think it was the story. Yeah, it was of this rally. So Scott Martin, his co-driver, they have a great relationship, and they're coming into the stop line. And yeah, Craig is starting to lose it because, you know, he's emotional, and Scott is going, keep it together, keep it together, keep it together. Craig's like, I can't. It's just brilliant. I love it. I love how emotional Craig gets, though. You know, I've seen him a couple of times in tears of sadness. Unfortunately, it was first off when he lost Jaff, and he'd come back. I think his first rally back, it was in Finland. He'd come back, and Paul Nagel was alongside him for that event.
Yeah.
And he came into a service point, midpoint service, on, I think it was probably the first day, and he was white as a sheet. And it was going okay. You know, he was back in the car, which was great. It was going okay, and he mentioned Jaff in our interview, and I could just, the tears just, boom, straight in his eyes. So I was just like, you know, yeah, Lisa back in the studio, just give us a minute, I'll be back with you. And we had a big hug. I was like, come on, you know, it's all okay. Yeah, it's all okay, it's all good. So I've seen the tears of sadness and, you know, that whole period that he went through. And then to see those tears of joy at the stage end, it's magical. I love him. I hope he never changes, because that's something unique with Craig. He really does wear his heart on his sleeve, and I love that about him.
I love the fact, and again, my missus always kind of thinks I've got a bit of a man crush on Craig. And maybe a tiny bit. But no, I've known Craig for such a long time, and Craig hasn't changed.
No, he hasn't.
And that's what... And you know, I'm sure there's lots of drivers like that, but I've not known all the other drivers kind of the way I've known Craig, kind of coming up through the ranks, as it were. And you know, he loves his rallying and loves to talk rallying in general. You know, he'd much rather talk about rallying from the 80s or the 90s than talk about what he's doing. You know, he's just, he's got such a passion for it and everything else. And that's what I love about him. And as you say, he hasn't lost any of that. And that's why, sneakily, I've always got a little bit of a soft spot for him.
He's always going to be the man who loves his tea. You know, I find it hilarious that he is with the Citroën team, because not only are they are the most ardent coffee drinkers you will ever meet. I mean, Loeb's coffee machine was legendary in the Citroën service area. They have every type of coffee available. And then, you know, in rocks this kid from Ireland who wants some English breakfast tea, please, and a splash of milk. And he's looked at as if he's an alien. But not only that, with Craig, he hates, I'm sure he's not going to mind me sharing this with you because I've talked about it on the radio before, he hates fussy food. He's very much a plain food eater. So he'll have some chicken breast and some rice. Nothing on the chicken breast, nothing on the rice. Plain food all the way. So you rock up at Citroën, and again, you know, they really do put their massive effort into everything. And the food there is, you know, well-renowned as being the best in the service park. And it's pretty fancy. So Craig walks in, he's like, no. No, plain chicken breast and some rice, please. And the chef is just like, what am I working with?
Yeah, I spent 5 years in Michelin star college. What am I doing?
They've brought me to cook plain chicken and rice. What?
Yeah. I love it. Listen, Bex, it's been a joy to have you, and I can't wait to listen to you for the new season. Genuinely, I am like a kid in a toy shop. It's probably every rally fan is with regards to the new generation of cars, but you're going to be there, and I'm massively
I can't. So. I can't wait, especially, you know, after being again at the launch yesterday, seeing, hearing the car, and you see and feel the buzz and excitement from everyone. You just can't. Let's get going. Forget about Christmas. Let's just move that to one side. Let's just head to Monte Carlo right now. That's the feeling it gives you. It really is. That is the feeling that gives you. 1 o'clock in the morning when I got home last night, though, I was very keen for Christmas to come and have a bit of a rest. But yeah, I think next season is going to be absolutely awesome. I can't wait to be there. Can't wait to tell everybody about it through WRC Live and just be part of it all. It is going to be pretty epic.
Fantastic. Folks, you heard it there first. Obviously, join Bex on WRC Live from Monte Carlo onwards. And obviously, you know, to get older Bex now, she's on Twitter and stuff like that. If you're not following her, shame on you. You should be. How do we get older? Let's just do that. I've started doing this more. I don't know why I do this. What is your, it's Bexy Wexy.
Yes, at Bexy Wexy. It's something Colin called me years ago, and it's stuck ever since. And it seems to be my Twitter handle, my Instagram handle, and I use it for pretty much everything. Now, it's my National Lottery handle as well, if you know. You can't crack it, though. You don't know my password. But I do use it for lots of things. Bexy Wexy.
Oh, well, there you go. Bexy Wexy, there you go. You know how to seek her out now. Folks, you know where we are. It's Absolute Rally, of course, _ on Twitter. And, yeah, by all means, drop us a line also on Facebook. Thanks for the download, folks. We will be back next week with our Absolute Rally pub quiz. I've no idea how it's going to work, but as I said at the top of the podcast, if you've got tricky questions you want me to ask our panel, please send them to me directly at TonySimpson74 on Twitter, because the other boys have access to the Absolute Rally Twitter feed. So let's not give them any help in trying to find out the answers to some of these tricky questions, all being well. But, folks, thanks for the download. Speak to you next week. We'll